Hey guys, Scott here. I got some speeches and events and things to tell you guys about. First of all, on the evening of February the 7th, I'm hosting another Renegade University at ThaddeusRussell.com. On February the 24th, I'm giving a talk here in Austin at Austin Anarchy in Action. On March 2nd, I'll be in D.C. tabling, selling books, hopefully, at the Israel Lobby Conference. But then on March 3rd, I'm flying up to Philadelphia to give a speech to the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party at their convention. But then I'll be back in D.C. on March the 4th to give two speeches, one at the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs bookstore and another at Tenleytown Library. So that's the weekend of March 2nd through 4th there. On March 20th, I'll be giving a speech at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. On March 24th, I'll be speaking at the New Jersey Libertarian Party Convention in New Brunswick, New Jersey. On April 28th, I'll be up in Fort Worth giving a talk to the local Libertarian Party group there. And in the first week of May, I'm not exactly sure, it's I think the 3rd through the 6th, one of those days, I will be in San Diego giving a speech for Libertopia. Then on June 21st, the Michigan Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest is going on. I'll be giving a talk there. And October the 6th, planning a little bit ahead now, on October the 6th, I'll be giving a talk at Liberty Fest, again in New York City.
Wall is the improvement of investment climates by other means, Clausewitz, for dummies.
The Scott Horton Show.
Taking out Saddam Hussein turned out to be a pretty good deal.
They hate our freedoms.
We're dealing with Hitler Revisited.
We couldn't wait for that Cold War to be over, could we? So we can go and play with our toys in the sand. Go and play with our toys in the sand.
No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare.
Today, I authorize the armed forces of the United States to begin military action in Libya. That action has now begun.
When the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
I cannot be silent in the face of the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
All right, y'all, introducing Ghassan Abu Char from Doctors Without Borders. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Very happy to have you on the show today. And we were put in touch by Doctors Without Borders because I was looking to talk with Claire Manera again, but apparently she's no longer in Yemen, and they recommended you instead. Are you in Yemen today?
Yes, I'm currently in Sana'a.
In Sana'a? Okay.
Yes, I'm the head of mission for Doctors Without Borders for Yemen. Claire Manera was indeed part of my team. She was the project coordinator for our Amran project. Now, unfortunately, she left, and we have a replacement for her.
Okay. Well, all right. Listen, so, okay, great. Head of mission. Appreciate that. All right. So I guess, well, overall, my first question is if you could just give us an update on the cholera epidemic. The Red Cross, I guess, says that a million people or approximately a million people have been infected with cholera there.
Well, since the last information you get from Claire, around August, September, we have started to close down our specialized cholera treatment centers in Yemen, one after the other. However, the hospitals have kept running, receiving all sorts of diarrhea diseases from the population. We at Doctors Without Borders think today that there are still cases of cholera inside of Yemen, although the epidemic has decreased a lot. It's now a dry season. There is not enough of transmission of the vibrio within the population. However, the situation is still the same from before the cholera started and during the cholera epidemic. So today, diarrhea cases are still very high. It could be this due to the cholera vibrio or to other factors, including non-safe water or no access to water at all. So we still receive a lot of diarrhea cases all over the country. And we think that between all those cases, there might be some cases of cholera. What we are doing now is that we are already starting to prepare for the rain season when it's going to start in a couple of months again in Yemen, where we are afraid that that the cases of cholera can increase again, like last year. Worse or less, we don't know for now.
Okay, so a few things to go back over there. If I understand you right, you're saying really the epidemic is over, just because the rainy season is over there, so that helps. But then, I guess, and this is something that I'd spoken with Jamie McGoldrick from the United Nations a few weeks ago, and he was saying that that really all cases of diarrhea being presented basically were being categorized as cholera because there was no real way to test everyone to see exactly what they had. So they were all just being, you know, basically treated the same. So I wonder whether you think that there's a real discrepancy in there, that maybe there were a lot of different, maybe waterborne diseases other than cholera. Sounds like you're still dealing with some other than cholera at this point.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same whether it's called cholera or not. People can still, especially children, can still, and their life is still at risk from a diarrhea, from a normal diarrhea, if not treated on time. So whether it's true what Jamie said is that due to the situation of the health system today, the needs are so big, and the national health system is being crippled by the situation, by the war in Yemen. So even with all the input coming from the humanitarian agencies and from Doctors Without Borders, it is difficult maybe for the humanitarian agency to test all the cases to know it's cholera or not. So surely everything is being treated as severe, which is good. Mm-hmm. This decreases the death rate from the diarrhea. But what's more worrying is that whether it's cholera or not, there is a high number of diarrhea cases.
Right. Well, and this is something that Scott Paul from Oxfam has emphasized as well, is that when people are going hungry, then they can die from the common cold, or they're much more likely to die from the kinds of diseases that otherwise would be easily preventable and hardly ever lethal.
But it's many factors. It's many factors because, yes, people are getting hungry. We are seeing an increased number of malnutrition in our centers. But also we have to take into consideration that more than half of the health centers inside the country are not functioning. So families with very basic diseases like a common cold or other symptoms don't have access to health care near them. And in addition to that, due to the economic situation, cannot afford to be transported, to get transport, actually, to pay for transport to get to hospitals like our hospitals in different governorates. So the people wait. A normal disease, a normal symptom, the families don't react to it directly because they don't have the possibilities to treat it. So they wait until the situation is very critical, until they seek medical care, which is very understandable. So what we see in our hospitals in the last 2 months, that there's less cases being presented to the hospitals, but the cases that are coming to our hospitals are very severe. So the people leave it till the last moment to come to the hospital. And this is basically due to the economic situation of the country.
Hey guys, here's how to support this show. First of all, buy my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Everybody likes it. And check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Sign up there. The great Eric Schuller has figured it out and is finally putting all 4,500-something interviews up on YouTube. So check that out. Sign up for the feeds at scotthorton.org and donate at scotthorton.org/donate. Anybody who donates $20 now gets the audiobook first, and you better hurry because it's done. It's just the files are screwed up. But anyway, you get the audiobook first if you donate $20 at scotthorton.org/donate. For $50, you get a signed book. $100, you get a QR code commodity disc. Scan it and get the instant spot price. And for a $200 donation to the show, you get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks. And yes, I take all different kinds of digital currencies as well. That's all at scotthorton.org/donate. And by the way, you can sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal. And those are really great. Those really help out. And thank you very much, everyone who signed up for those monthly subscriptions. Also, patreon.com/scotthortonshow. If you want to incentivize me to do more interviews, you can donate per interview at patreon.com/scotthortonshow. Anybody who signs up for $1 more per interview there gets 2 free audiobooks from Listen and Think. You can find out all about that stuff at scotthorton.org/donate. And there's an Amazon link. If you want to shop Amazon by way of my link, give me a good review on iTunes or Stitcher or Amazon.com if you've read the book and liked it. And then, of course, always share the show on social media. Tell your friends. You can invite me to give speeches, too. I'm at scott@scotthorton.org. Well, I guess, you know, there's some confusion when we hear reports that we're going from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to right around 1 million cases of cholera, and then the numbers are that a few thousand have died. That, you know, it sounds strange. And so it sounds like really, well, I don't know. So what is to account for that? Or how many people do you think, or do you know, how many people have died of cholera or other waterborne type diseases in, say, the last year? I mean, the cholera outbreak started last spring, right?
Yeah, we think that the numbers presented of death of death due to the cholera epidemic, the last one, are approximately true. There are indeed some villages and some areas in Yemen that are not accessible, especially the ones close to very close to the front line, where there is a lot of airstrikes or there is ongoing fighting, where the people are trapped inside. Actually, the death rate of this epidemic of cholera, it's good that the death rate was low, not like other epidemics. But this, we think, could be from the reaction, a quick reaction. I know from our side to set up cholera treatment centers, but also possibly because not all the cases presented were really cholera. Right. So it could be a combination of many factors, but unfortunately today we didn't yet study to know why the death rate had been so low.
Yeah. Well, and not to play down the deaths that have occurred, but yeah, you're right. It's, you know, if it's a overestimation in the first place, then, you know, I guess that's, you know, forgivable once it gets all straightened out. But the real bottom line, of course, is the number of lives saved. And, you know, you guys there have been doing everything you can. I know from talking with Claire ever since last spring that you guys are really working as hard as you can to distribute. The main medicine for cholera treatment is just a bag of saline, right? It's just to keep people hydrated.
Yeah,
is that correct?
It's very easy to treat. It's very easy to treat as a disease as long as the people get to a health facility in time. Mm-hmm. Because once the vibrio gets active, the dehydration could happen in 4 to 8 hours. Especially for children and or for older people who have already another disease, and death could be in that time as well. So this is always related to how fast can we get the treatment, which is hydration basically. But yes, I think the minion this represents this. This overestimation where some agencies are not able, or the Ministry of Health here is not able to differentiate between cholera and non-cholera, represents somehow the huge need inside the country, where all organizations, including us, are not able to deal with. It's today, every month, it gets bigger and bigger, and more factors, negative factors, are included in it. Today, Dr. Without Borders, the Yemen mission here is one of the biggest around the world. We are deployed in 10 governorates. We have more than 2,000 people working with us inside the country, and we cannot say that our work is enough for the needs that are existing.
Right.
And this applies, I think, to many other organizations inside the country and the Ministry of Health.
Right. Yeah, after all, even 1,000 cases of cholera is a huge outbreak if you're one of the 1,000, or it's somebody you care about is one of the 1,000. So, yeah, I mean, and of course, we're now at almost 3 years of the war. And I mean, the U.S. had been bombing the south of the country, Al-Qaeda targets, prior to that. But we've had, you know, real war going on there for 3 years now. So obviously, all the methods of distribution, all the markets and everything are all disrupted in a terrible way. And of course, you know, with the move of the central bank from the capital city down to Aden and the cutting off of the pay of all the civil servants in Sana and north of there, that has, of course, had a huge toll. And, you know, it's my understanding that that's a big part of what led to the cholera outbreak in the first place, was no one's paying the garbage men. And you know, that's assuming, and I don't know if the Saudis have bombed the waterworks or not, but, you know, certainly the locals' ability to maintain all the previous systems of water and garbage service and these basics have been compromised by the war.
Yeah, what we see around us is that what in terms of water supply, so pipes, wells, and other mechanism, I'm not an expert in water, but also the health facility is the same. What has not been destroyed through the war, during fighting or due to airstrikes, is today not functioning because salaries are not paid for the people who make those repairs or maintenance or make it function on a daily basis, like, for example, health staff, even cleaners in health centers. And so what is there, it's most of the time not working. So it's a crippling factor for the health system, but also for the water and hygiene system altogether. In addition to that, the people, due to the economic situation where goods inside the country are sometimes not getting in so easy, but also where people are losing their jobs. Even if the goods are in the market, the people cannot afford to buy them anymore. Since 3 months until today, the Yemeni riyal have lost its value to around maybe 100-200%. The fuel, so petrol, even for cars, for generators, have doubled in price. So the people cannot afford basic commodities anymore.
Right. Now, and so what exactly is the state of the current water system in the capital and in the north of the country, or in the south for that matter? I mean, are they able to get...
Same. Yeah. It's the same all over the country. It's the same situation. We work in governor. It's considered as south and north. The situation is the same. All public services are struggling to function. Mostly relying on aid from NGOs. A lot of it has been also destroyed or broken and needs to be replaced.
All right, yeah. I mean, what's being done about that? I guess I read that some new cranes were delivered to the Hodeida port. Are they up and operating now? Is anybody, and then is the equipment and the things required to fix the water treatment, is that involved? Is that part of what's coming in at all?
In terms of water, we don't have a daily inspection on that because we don't directly work in the normal water system. We focus on health. What we know related to bringing things inside the country. So yes, Hodeida port is open for humanitarian aid, which is a very good step. Sana'a Airport is open for humanitarian flights, but still blocked for normal flights. The problem is that the country cannot only survive on humanitarian aid. The normal markets need to work. There should be access for people to travel in and outside the country. Example, for people who need very complicated surgeries that today cannot get it inside Yemen and need to fly out, they are blocked inside the country. Hodeida port, Sana'a airport are today only open for humanitarian aid, but not for normal ships and passengers.
Well, now the Saudis had previously bombed those cranes, but are the new ones up and operational again?
Actually, I don't know. I cannot answer that.
Okay, fair enough. What were the, as far as you know, during the worst of the cholera and all that, what was the best estimate of the number of people who had died during that?
I think what has been reported, around 2,000 people who have died during the cholera epidemic is a good estimate.
And I know that this is, you know, incredibly difficult to do. It won't be until years later when they are able to measure all the excess death rates and all that kind of thing. But, you know, we've heard from the beginning of the war, again, almost 3 years on now, that this is, one, the poorest country in the Middle East, and two, their 80 to 90% or previously were 80 to 90% dependent on food imports, and for complicated reasons. But anyway, and so there's been fear from, you know, the non-governmental organizations and some of the governmental ones all this time that there would be massive famine, that people would be dying even by the millions. And so it's 3 years on, and people are always saying the brink of famine, the brink of famine. And so I just wonder whether there is a famine in Yemen, or if, you know, people are still getting by on just enough. You know, again, as Scott Paul said, when people are hungry, they die of otherwise treatable diseases and that kind of thing. But are they really starving, or how bad is it?
We cannot today, as Doctors Without Borders, assess to confirm or not confirm what the UN is saying about the famine or the incoming famine in Yemen. What we see in our hospitals, in different governorates in Yemen, that yes, there is an increased number of malnourished children inside the country, which is a big indicator for such type of declarations. There is an increase, but however, before this war started, there was already also cases of malnutrition within the society, especially in some pockets of some rural areas inside of Yemen. Now the number is increasing. What we see is that families are obliged to seek what we call negative coping mechanisms. Example, a mother, instead of breastfeeding her child, would switch to milk, powder milk, because she has to go and work the fields or work somewhere to get some basic income for the family, which leads that a child from 0 to 6 months is not adapted to get normal powder milk. And also the family cannot buy specialized children powder milk, because this is a very expensive product. So we see a lot of children arriving malnourished in our facilities because of negative coping mechanisms. People have more difficulties to get access to diversified food, that's for sure. And more children are today at risk of having to get malnourished due to lack of food, but also, and this is very important, due to another disease. A lot of diseases for children from 6 months to five years can cause malnutrition, and which make the situation very complicated to treat, and also for the child to get out of.
All right, you guys, this show is sponsored by Zencash. It's a new digital currency, has all kinds of different features. You can send documents and messages and all kinds of other things with it, too. It's great. It's called Zencash. Look it up at zensystem.io, zensystem.io. Read my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and also The War State by the great Michael Swanson. This is such a great and important book. It's about the rise of the military-industrial complex in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy years, and goes to show what those three presidents did to build it up and also try to fight to limit its power as well. Very interesting book, The War State. Now, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. Let me tell you, these guys have been around as long as I have, since the mid to late 70s. And they do an incredible job. They charge the slightest of premiums to broker your exchanges in gold, silver, platinum, palladium. And there's no charge at all if you use Bitcoin. That's Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc., RRBI.co, rbi.co. LibertyStickers.com. We're working on a brand new site, brand new art, and all kinds of stuff. It's not up there yet, but soon LibertyStickers.com is going to be rocking. And of course, if you want a 2018 model website, then you need to go to ExpandDesigns.com and get a brand new website from them. And if you go to ExpandDesigns.com/Scott, you'll save $500.
All right, now, I'm sorry. I'm just way over here in Austin, Texas, and I just have no idea, you know, what questions I should ask that I don't know to ask. Is there anything else that you can tell us that you think the audience needs to hear?
I think today what we are feeling here, what we are feeling at the Food Without Borders here is that the situation is just getting more and more complicated because in addition to the ongoing fighting inside the country, which has been going now for 3 years, the danger for people to move. Sometimes they die in their houses. Civilians die in their houses because of bombing, because they are caught in crossfire. Same what we saw in Aden 2 days ago, where we see, like, for example, a whole family all together that was caught in the crossfire. In addition to all of that, there's so many external and internal factors that make the situation worse. Getting aid into Yemen today is getting more difficult due to bureaucratic procedures that are being put by the different parties of the conflict, which is delaying the delivery of aid, medical aid and other aid, I think, but also making it for us more difficult to deliver this aid and raising also the operational cost, which is a non-essential cost, to get this aid inside the country. So everything is coming back to the civilian at the end, especially to the women and children, where for them, getting them, for themselves, basic commodities is difficult, but also receiving aid is more difficult. So this is a very worrying situation where we are always in contact with the different parties of the conflict. We are always trying to negotiate a better way and a more easy way to get aid in and to move inside the country. But unfortunately, it looks like we are going towards an opposite direction.
Yeah, well, and I know that this is a bit outside of your expertise, and you may not want to comment on it, but I wonder if you have a feeling that things are getting better politically in any way in London, in D.C., in Paris, anywhere where it matters, where someone might be able to, you know, decide that enough is enough and call the Saudis American war off here? Or is it just on autopilot? Because nobody really talks about Yemen at all. It didn't even merit one word in the President's State of the Union speech last night.
We do follow the news. We do follow the news for sure on what discussions are happening or initiatives that are happening in different countries, of statements that is being done by different countries, especially about the humanitarian situation in the country. However, I cannot but share the feeling of my colleagues here who are Yemeni and the population that we treat, that I talk to when I go to the hospitals. It's just loss of hope. After 3 years, there have been initiatives, there have been a lot of talks, but no real action. The only action that is being taken is to make our work more difficult.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time on the show today, Ghassan.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me as well.
All right, you guys. That is Ghassan Abu Char. He is the head of mission for Doctors Without Borders in Yemen. And in fact, are you still there, sir? Are you still there on the line, Ghassan? I'm sorry. You know what? I very nearly forgot to ask you, how can people get involved and help? I mean, politically, that's one thing, but in terms of getting involved with Doctors Without Borders, helping support specifically y'all's efforts in Yemen, please.
You can always visit our website, the Doctors Without Borders website. On it, you can find all the information you want about our mission in Yemen regarding to what we do and what is the situation there. So we always put updates on the current situation inside the country. And also on the website, you can find a donate button where you can have a one-time donation, or you can also have a subscription where you donate on a monthly basis, or also join different campaigns that are led by the organizations as well.
Great. And then, by the way, is there a way if people donate, can they say, I want this money to be earmarked specifically for Yemen or specifically for Palestinian refugees or whoever it's going to?
Yes. Usually we prefer that the money being donated is not earmarked. This is so that we continue to have our impartiality and neutrality in the actions we do. Uh-huh. We do. If you donate to us, however, we will always keep sending you information of how the donation is being used on our different missions in the world. It could be Yemen or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. However, you can always put your wish on where this money you want to go.
Okay, great. Listen, I really appreciate that very much again.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right, you guys, again, that is Ghassan Abu-Char. And of course, the website is doctorswithoutborders.org. And you know me, the show is at scotthorton.org. The stuff I want you to read is at antiwar.com and at the Libertarian Institute. And my book is Fool's Errand. That's at fool'serrand.us. Follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Thanks, guys.